Chapter 3. As promised, the summons arrived with the first rays of the sun. Both found Elith ready and waiting. Nieda had again sat watch throughout the night. While Elith had silently prepared her gear for another assignment, the Elder Advocate had made no inquiry about the unprecedented breach of the recovery protocol. Only when Vryn reappeared at the door did Nieda allow her eyes to ask the question she would not speak. "Thank you, Nieda," Elith said, embracing her. It was all she could say. "Be well, Elith," Nieda replied, returning the embrace. Of all those in First House, it was the advocates of the voice who best understood the need for discretion. Their comings and goings were often sudden and unexplained. That didn't make it any easier to accept that a departure offered no guarantee of a return. Elith had lost many sisters in her time, without warning, without discussion, without closure. Their names were recorded, but never their fates. Few outside the order of the voice better understood the naive assumption of immortality hidden in a casual, "See you tomorrow." Elith and Nieda separated, but held hands briefly as each looked upon the other's face, fixing in their minds the shared moment. And then Elith turned, took up her pack, and followed Vryn out into the corridor. It wasn't until they were outside that they spoke, and only then with voices lowered. "The Hezra have sent a shuttle," Vryn said. "It should be arriving at the eastern gate shortly." She handed Elith a small device, a tangle interpreter, black, rectangular, roughly the size of her forefinger. Elith accepted it, evaluated it. "The Paragon?" she asked. Vryn nodded. The interpreter had a twin, and that was in the keeping of the Paragon herself. As a pair, the devices enabled instant communication across any distance, encrypted with unbreakable codes. Even the Hezra's fearsome signals intelligence arm could do nothing to decode the messages. Mere interception would immediately alert both devices and cause them to switch encryption schemes. Never before had Elith been granted a direct channel to the Paragon. Now, if she understood the intent behind the interpreter, it seemed that the Paragon would be her only channel. She secured the device in a slender pocket on her vest. "Is it activated?" she asked. Vryn shook her head. "It will activate when the Paragon sees fit. That is all I know."
"I assume the usual protocols remain?" Elith said.
"It would be my assumption as well," Vryn replied, "but only that. My instructions were to deliver the interpreter and escort you to the shuttle. I know nothing more." Elith nodded, and the two walked the rest of the way in silence. The shuttle was waiting when they arrived, humming quietly as it hovered a foot above the ground. A young non-commissioned officer of the Hezra stood beside it. His hallmark crimson and black uniform as neat and seemingly rigid as his stance, as though both the man and the outfit had been chiseled from a single multicolored stone. When Elith approached, the officer made no direct acknowledgement of her, but pivoted on his heel like a clockwork doll. The side panel of the shuttle slid open to accept her, revealing an empty four-seat compartment. Elith nodded to the officer as she passed. He did not respond, not even by meeting her eye. But Elith noted the tiny beads of sweat that had formed on his forehead, where his hat met his skin, and she allowed herself an inward smile. Hezra personnel were legendary for their remarkable self-control. It was easy to confuse their discipline for disdain. It was equally easy for them to conceal disdain under the guise of discipline. In this case, at least, Elith saw the marks of the young officer's awe and fear of her, but nothing of contempt. As much of a welcome as she was likely to receive. She glanced at the insignia on his uniform. A lance corporal in 3 reconnaissance, one of the Hezra's quietest special operations forces. "Thank you for your courtesy, lance corporal," she said, as she climbed into the compartment. She sat and looked to him. "I have a better appreciation of your unit's nickname now." He almost suppressed the reaction, but the tightening of his lips
and the flush of his cheeks suggested the compliment met its mark. Troopers in 3 Recon were informally known as the Fear Eaters, and the young man had done a good job of swallowing his. Elith turned to address Vryn.
"Sarath Hanan be your guide, favored one," Elith said.
Vryn bowed her head and answered,
"Your way be my way."
The door panel closed, and Vryn did not raise her head as the shuttle lifted smoothly off. Elith barely felt the acceleration as the vaunt dwindled behind her to miniature, until the green of its grounds were at last swallowed by the gray-brown of the surrounding urban sprawl. Soon details were lost to distance, and shortly after they left the last traces of atmosphere behind. The journey to the orbital docking station took roughly half an hour. Elith had visited it countless times over the years, but the approach never failed to impress upon her the Hezra's mastery of discipline and order. Vessels of varying sizes arrived, departed, and orbited the spherical structure with a beautiful complexity, a corona of ships swirling around the megastructure. From a distance, the intricacy of movement could almost be mistaken for a living thing, but Elith knew each and every ship was exactly where it was meant to be, following some strict formula of precise navigation. 2 capital ships were in dock. Twin Titans, standing watch over the rest of the traffic, made insignificant by comparison. Elith recognized one as Herald Class, the Hezra's fearsome vanguard cruiser and the backbone of any blockade force. The ship carried an ominous weight in Elith's eyes, despite its otherwise sleek, elegant appearance, like the relaxed musculature of a tiger sleeping, with its raw power resting within. She knew the Herald Class for what it was, the linchpin weapon for the contingency. The shuttle followed its course toward the station, but rolled and angled before it reached a dock. Instead, they approached another vessel of moderate size, whose design Elith didn't recognize. It was an order of magnitude larger than the shuttle, and would have been impressive to behold had it not been in the presence of the Herald Class. When the shuttle arrived and was fully settled, Elith found another Hezra officer awaiting her in the hangar. He greeted her politely and professionally, but spoke nothing more as he escorted her to the bridge of the vessel. The corridors were narrow, barely wide enough for 2 to pass without brushing shoulders. Curiously, they met no other personnel on the route. The walk was short, however, and the door to the bridge was open. As they approached, Elith could hear a conversation taking place within.
"Cleared to get underway at our discretion," a deep voice was saying. "We're all accounted for."
"Aye, Captain. All stands ready," answered a younger man's voice. "We can disembark as soon as that Grey Witch shows up."
The last word was hanging in the air when Elith reached the entrance, and she easily identified the one who had been speaking. Though his back was to her, she could see in his posture how he reacted to the sudden stillness of the room and the dread upon him as he turned to find her standing there.
"Esteemed advocate," he said
after a moment, a smile without warmth oozing across his face. A first lieutenant, young and proud by the look of him, his bearing suggested a level of entitlement to the position, one who had earned his commission through family connections rather than service, Elith estimated. She held her place by the entrance, remaining in the corridor for the moment, while her escort stood at her side, trying to fade into the background. The lieutenant took a tentative step forward, but then seemed to think better of it.
"Welcome aboard the Heligoss," he continued. "It's truly our honor to host a dignitary from First House."
Elith wouldn't pretend she hadn't heard what he'd said, but neither did she wish to further the man's humiliation in front of his peers. She simply offered a nod to accept his welcome and then directed her attention to the ranking officer, whom she picked out with ease.
"Permission to enter, sir," she said.
"Of course, advocate," the captain answered.
Elith crossed the threshold and stepped onto the bridge, then waited patiently to one side of the door.
"We'll be leaving dock shortly," the lieutenant said, unnecessarily,
His tone was cloyingly eager. We're basically ready to go and anxious to get underway. We certainly don't want to cause any delay in your undoubtedly important errand.
Elith did not take her eyes from the captain of the vessel.
Lieutenant,
the captain finally said.
Sir,
the lieutenant answered.
You're dismissed.
A span of a complete breath passed before the young officer responded.
Yes, sir,
he finally said. He slid out with his gaze lowered just enough to avoid making eye contact with anyone as he went. The bridge remained silent until the lieutenant had fully departed. Elith herself was at ease, quietly composed. The ship's personnel all seemed paralyzed, as if any movement might draw attention best avoided.
I'm Captain Genzet,
the captain said at last, placing his hand over his heart and dipping his head in greeting. The shallowness of his bow wasn't quite disrespectful, but left no doubt about his opinion of having been required to take her on board.
My ship is at the service of the First House.
Elith bowed in response, the perfect model of etiquette and respect. The captain waited briefly for her to reply, but it was understood that an advocate of First House would offer her name only if and when she deemed it appropriate. It was not a thing to be expected or requested. Her mere presence seemed to put even the captain off balance. He was a formidable man, both tall and powerfully built, and he bore his authority well. Undoubtedly, there were few people he had encountered who had not been intimidated by his stature and projection of power. But Elith had touched infinity, and he was just a man.
He said at last, we've made a cabin available for you.
Thank you for your service. Elith responded, how long do you expect travel to take?
About 18 hours to clear the horizon on this side, the captain answered. Twice that on the other end to reach your point of departure.
Very good. I'll remain in my quarters until we're positioned for launch.
There's no need to isolate yourself on our account, Advocate. You're welcome to dine with me or in the officer's mess.
Thank you, Captain. But I'll not disrupt your good order further than I already have. I'm aware of the burden I create for you and your crew. Elith held his gaze, saw the conflict in his expression, the desire to present a facade of friendship and welcome mingled with relief at the idea of having her hidden away.
As you'll have it,
he said with another bow, this time inching closer to respect. If you can spare someone to direct me there, I'll get out of your way now. I'm sure you have plenty else to concern yourself with.
Certainly.
He motioned to his executive officer, a woman about Elith's age and commander by rank. The woman nodded and approached Elith.
But if there's anything you need, the captain added, don't hesitate to ask. Commander Adura is available to you at any time.
Elith bowed again and turned to the commander.
If you'll follow me, Advocate,
Adura said, the smile on her face subdued but genuine. Elith followed her out into the corridor and to the nearest elevator. Once they entered the elevator and the door had closed, the commander spoke without looking at Elith.
Some of the crew might resent having you aboard, she said, but the sentiment isn't universal. Many of us consider it an honor to host an advocate of the house, however trivial our service to her may be.
Thank you, Commander, Elith said, but we are all equals in our service to the Ascendants.
Of course, the commander replied.
The commander's demeanor remained professional, but Elith sensed an openness in the woman, a genuine respect for First House, and no small amount of curiosity. As slight of an advantage as it was, Elith seized the opportunity with the subtlest influence.
Vine and branch, kindred souls intertwine, she said, in the deep language, her words concealed within an exhale.
Adura made no outward sign of the effect settling over her, an indication that Elith had read her correctly, and that the commander was neither aware of nor resistant to the influence. A mild loosening of the tongue, a nudge in the direction of trust when the inclination was already there. A moment later, Elith spoke in the low language, making what would appear to be small talk.
I have great respect for three reconnaissance and all who support them, she said, Do you serve with them regularly?
Ajira nodded. We are permanently attached to the Fear Eaters. The Heligoss is classified as a swift transport vessel, so we cart them all over the place, and not always just on training ops either.
Crew is used to discretion, then, I imagine.
Quite.
And the Heligoss itself? I don't believe I've had the pleasure of traveling on a ship of its design.
She's actually an older vessel, old enough to have been retired, in fact, but Command decided to upfit her instead.
A noble history?
Not that anyone can talk about, Ajira said with a smile. If I had to guess, though, I'd wager our little excursion around the Basho system is to put her through her paces and see if she's still up to task.
The commander paused after she spoke, and then shook her head to herself.
Sorry, I don't know why I'm rambling. I'm sure it's no matter to you.
On the contrary, it is rare for one of my order to witness firsthand the mighty Hezra in action. The elevator reached the destination deck, and the door slid open. Ajira held out a hand to usher Elith into the corridor.
Just a couple doors down to the right, she said.
The section of the deck appeared to be officers' quarters, though the doors on both sides were all closed, and no one else was in sight.
It's quieter than I'd expected, Elith said. We're not running a full crew for this outing, Ajira replied, and everyone's either at station or in their quarters. Captain thought it'd be best not to have too much traffic while you were getting situated.
For my sake or his?
Both, I suspect, though his share more than yours, I imagine.
They stopped four cabins down from the elevator, and the door slid open to admit them.
This one's yours for the duration. I'm afraid it's not much.
The quarters were only as large as absolutely necessary for the facilities provided. A bunk bed, a small desk with a chair, a private bathroom that was nearly standing room only. The bunk suggested it typically housed two, which made Elith aware of how much trouble they'd gone to on her account. It's more than sufficient, Elith answered. Please share my gratitude with your crew.
You're familiar with all the usual controls? Ajira asked.
I am. If you'd be kind enough to alert me when I have 2 hours before launch, I'd be grateful. Otherwise, I'd prefer not to be disturbed.
Of course, Advocate. I'll see to it personally. If anything should come up, you can contact me directly through the ship system. But if not, well, I suppose I'll see you in a couple of days.
Thank you, Commander. Ajira bowed and departed. Elith watched her as she went. After the commander had gone several feet down the corridor, she hitched a step and hesitated briefly, as though she'd just remembered something. The effects of the deep language burning off, though she would never identify it as such. But Ajira shook her head once, and then continued on, without looking back. Left alone, Elith surveyed her quarters once more, and then took care of her first order of business, securing them. From her pack, she removed a sensor about the size of her palm and performed a sweep of the cabin. As expected, she located two active surveillance devices in somewhat obvious locations, and a third, passive one, subtler in design and placement. A fine attempt. She couldn't fault the Hezra, really. Undoubtedly, they were as unsure about her as she was about them. With the devices identified, she placed the sensor on the desk and activated its countermeasures, effectively isolating the cabin. With that done, she set to unloading her pack. She removed everything from her pack and arranged it all on the lower bunk, laid out in a pattern refined over many years so that she could see it all in one glance and know immediately if anything was out of place or missing. One thing she didn't have a usual place for, however, was the frost oak cutting she'd brought along. She hadn't taken it with any specific intent. It had been the last thing she'd packed, and that at a whim. But at the time, it had seemed right to bring it, and that had been enough. Its tiny leaves had already wilted and curled. She rolled the thin branch between her thumb and fingers briefly, felt its texture, remembered how it had looked before she had trimmed it from its source and the Paragon's words that tied it to Quell. After a moment, she laid it on the thin mattress next to the Tangle interpreter. Together, in her mind, they represented her purpose. To go, to observe, to report, and should it prove necessary, to act.
When all was arranged, as she liked it, she took out her personal data terminal, placed it on the desk in preparation for her preliminary research on her target. Before she settled into her work, the sounds of the ship undocking rolled through like deep, distant thunder. And now her mission was truly underway. Her brief discussion with the commander had given her a few details to consider: the skeleton crew, the deployment of 3 recon, the apparent training designation of their operation, and Adura's suggestion that the whole trip was an exercise to test out the vessel itself. Nothing stood out to her immediately, but Elith knew that the Paragon had placed her on the ship for a reason, and she mentally filed the details away in case greater relevance might later emerge. The political games between the Hezra, First House, and the Grand Council were constant and many-layered. And though Elith could never fully discern everything that was at play, she at least tried to be aware of the pieces, particularly knowing that she herself was one. She accessed her terminal and began her initial evaluation of Quell with a process of environmental scanning, a high-level survey to identify the current state of the world, touching local governmental structure, economy, geography, demographics, climate. Though the basic structure of Ascendant's society was the same throughout the galaxy, every world had its own personality. As she studied, she allowed the data to merge and coalesce into a single, overarching impression, a mental model of Quell as a whole. It was not unlike her time in the Paragon's garden, searching for that which was out of place. And at the end of her survey, a coherent view of Quell emerged in her mind. It was a nothing world. No more than 1 billion citizens, their patterns of movement and behavior almost boring in their predictability. Whatever the eye of the First House had seen must have been subtle indeed. As a point of entry, she selected a moderate-sized settlement called Orinesse, home to a well-regarded academy. Such places were often easier to infiltrate, since citizens traveled from all over the planet and sometimes from off-world to attend academies or to live and work within their orbit. And though she couldn't quite identify it, something about Orinesse drew her attention in a way other potential sites failed to. Gut instinct alerted her to details her conscious mind could not articulate. The location had the added advantage of being adjacent to a large stretch of uncultivated, mountainous land. Given its proximity to pure wilderness, it seemed like a prime first point of contact to familiarize herself with both the natural and human elements of Quell. If only it hadn't been in one of the colder regions of the world, it would have been perfect. She'd never cared much for the cold. With that critical decision made, Elith allowed herself an extended break to rest and to run through her meditation sequence. As she was completing her routine, she felt the ripple through her being that marked the ship's brief use of its aspect drive. The sensation was but an instant, hardly long enough to register consciously, already a memory by the time it was noticed. For most, the transition between radiant propulsion and the aspect drive was undetectable, but the power that transported the ship across the galaxy was of the same kind that she herself drew upon to carry out her solemn duty. Not that the ship could speak exactly, though the concept wasn't too far from the truth. Its effects resonated through her, like hearing in the distance the voice of a loved one long lost. But there was something subtly different in the echo of the shift, a quiet but discordant note in the symphony. Elith felt it more than anything, and that barely. When she tried to quantify or classify it, she found there was nothing to hold on to. But she noted the sensation nevertheless, tried to encode what she could of the experience in her memory. And as she returned to her mission preparations, she found herself unable to dismiss the moment from her mind. After an hour, Elith decided to do something about it. She sent a low-priority message to Adura through the ship's internal communications system and then secured her gear. 15 minutes later, her door chimed. Elith took a moment to place a device just above the entrance, one that would inform her if anyone tried to access the cabin in her absence. Once it was in place, she opened the door to find the commander standing there.
"Advocate," Adira said, "how may I be of service?"
"Commander," Elith said with a bow, "I was wondering if perhaps I might get a tour of the ship. I seem to have overestimated my tolerance for small spaces."
"It takes some getting used to," Adira answered. "If you just need to get out, I'm sure we can find a deck or two. I'm afraid it won't be much of a tour, though. Operations areas are off limits while we're in transit. Anything that doesn't cause trouble for you."
"Certainly. Let's see what we can find." Adira escorted Elith back to the elevator and down several decks to the vessel's common areas. They walked for a time, Elith gradually leading the light conversation from general pleasantries to more targeted questions about the Heligoss.
"You mentioned she was a swift transport vessel," she said. "Does she use standard drives?"
Where Adira's responses had flowed naturally before, the hesitation before her response told Elith more than her words.
"Yes, all standard drives," she said. "The classification has as much to do with readiness as with capability. We can deploy on short notice. She is a bit faster on Radiant, but her aspect drive is the same as every other vessel in service."
The emphasis she placed on downplaying the aspect drive stood out, and Elith felt the change. A withdrawal on Adira's part, as though she'd awakened to how freely she'd been speaking before. Elith didn't probe any further about the drive technology. The line of questioning had struck close enough to the mark. Whatever other work had been done on the Heligoss, its aspect drive most certainly was not standard. Adira continued to escort her a few minutes more before drawing their time to a close, apologizing and citing her need to attend to other duties. They returned to Elith's quarters, and the commander extracted herself from the conversation politely and with warmth. But Elith saw through the veneer. The initial openness Adira had felt toward her had faded, and with it vanished the subtle influence Elith had exerted over the woman. After Adira had departed, Elith checked the device above the door. As anticipated, someone indeed accessed the cabin while she'd been away. All her gear remained secure, and apart from the indication of her device, there were no apparent signs of intrusion. But knowing the troopers of 3 Recon were on board made that no surprise. As she returned to her work, she couldn't help but shake her head at the dance taking place even now between the Hezra and the First House. A gentle poke, indeed. Undoubtedly, the Paragon had known more about the Heligoss than she'd let on. Communication channels on both sides were probably stirred up, and the advocates of the Eye were most assuredly at work soaking up the information. Elith guessed she had played her role aboard the vessel without knowing what that role had been meant to be. But having satisfied the itch in her mind over the vessel's aspect drive, she completed her planning and then turned to a final check of her gear. She lingered over the task, part due diligence, part ritual. Each tool in her arsenal she inspected and verified for function and then secured in its particular place. Her supplies she reviewed for quantity, carefully recalculating how long they would last her. 10 standard days in the field would be manageable. More would be possible if circumstance demanded. It wasn't her plan to stay out that long, nor did she relish the idea. But the kinds of operations she conducted required loose plans and a flexible mindset. Elith scanned her cabin. All was as she had found it. At that point, not knowing what her first hours on planet would bring, or perhaps knowing just enough, she decided to sleep while she could. She lay down on the bottom bunk, fully dressed and on top of the covers. In what seemed like moments later, she woke to the sound of the door softly chiming. She rose and opened the door, expecting to find Commander Adira, but instead was greeted by a young officer she hadn't met before. Elith concealed her surprise.
"Yes," she said.
"Advocate, we are 2 hours from your launch window," he said with a bow.
I'll escort you when you're ready.
Thank you, she said.
I'm ready to go now. Of course, the officer said. Follow me if you will.
Elith grabbed her pack and followed him to the elevator. Neither of them felt it necessary to converse. They traveled to the center deck, where dual hangar bays flanked the spine of the vessel. At first, Elith was glad to see the more regular activity of the ship's crew as they carried out their various duties. It made her presence seem less managed than her initial arrival had suggested. But as they walked through the massive hangar, the diligence the crew members showed in ignoring her reinforced her sense of unease. Though a few cast glances her way, most seemed unusually focused on their tasks. And to her careful eye, it wasn't always clear just what those tasks were. The officer led Elith through the starboard bay, weaving between the various transports and gunships that all seemed parked too close together. Her ship waited toward the rear, already locked into its rails, ready for launch out of the last port in the line. It was a muscular vessel, with the look of a hound crouching in its kennel, eager for release. A pair of midshipmen busied themselves nearby, verifying their end of the launch protocol.
Captain Jensit sends his regards, the officer said, as they approached the ship's hatch, and regrets he couldn't be here himself to see you off.
Elith suspected that was true, but probably not in the way it was suggested. Please convey my thanks to him, she replied.
Travel well, he said.
Elith bowed. May you ever ascend.
May we both, advocate of the house, the officer answered.
He bowed and took his leave. Elith turned and climbed aboard her ship, wondering again at Adura's absence, whether it had been the commander's choice or enforced by some other authority. But that was an answer she knew she was not likely to receive. She stowed her pack in its compartment just behind the cockpit, and then slid into the pilot's seat. Hers was a small, single-occupant vessel, originally designed by the Hezra for light mobile reconnaissance. Resting her hands on the controls brought a blend of emotions, emotions reminiscent of those awakened just before full contact training, where a comforting familiarity with the weapons and armor mingled with sharp anticipation of the coming clash. She felt simultaneously at home in the ship and energized by the unknown that awaited her. She had never been more uncertain of what she might face, nor more anxious about what she might find. For the moment, however, she set her mind to prepping the ship. The process didn't typically require as much time as Elith had requested, but just as she had with her gear, she allowed herself to carry out her systems check in unhurried fashion, attuned to each detail in its moment, and given the disquiet she felt, she took extra care in verifying no unauthorized changes or modifications had been made to her vessel. But all was clear, and her systems were good. As such, when the message came in from control that they were standing by to make ready for launch, Elith found that her mind and body were both still and quiet.
Kita, this is Heligoss Control, the controller said over comms. We're approaching launch vector. How do you stand?
Kita is condition white, Heligoss Control, Elith answered. Ready for your action.
Very good, Kita. Stand by.
Elith's console chirped twice in succession, the only indication that her ship was coordinating with the Heligoss's launch system.
We're angling now, the controller said. You may feel some shifting.
Understood, Elith replied. A few moments later, her ship vibrated with a deep hum as the rails supporting it adjusted their position.
Locking position, said the controller. Please confirm you're ready for launch.
I confirm Kita is ready for launch, Heligoss Control.
Kita confirms. 30 seconds to launch.
Elith started the count in her head and realized she was hunching her shoulders. She took a deep breath and settled back into the pilot's seat. This was the easy part. The Heligoss launch protocol required nothing from her. The rail system would fire her like a projectile from the ship, putting her on initial course.
It wouldn't be until after she and the Heligoss had separated a substantial distance that she would need to take control, to redirect toward her actual intended destination of Quell.
10 seconds, the controller said. He was silent again until 5, and then counted down from there to launch. Elith didn't reply before the sudden acceleration sank her back in her seat. Inertial dampeners mitigated most of the force, but it still took conscious effort to keep her heart rate from spiking. She counted to 20 before opening the comm channel one final time. Keeta has good separation and trajectory. Thank you for the lift, Heligoss Control.
Heligoss Control confirms good separation and trajectory, Keeta. Safe travels, Advocate.
Elith continued along her initial vector for a half hour under continual acceleration until she felt confident she'd gained enough distance to adjust course to Quell. She spent the solitary travel time in quiet meditation. Once she reached visual range of the planet, she flicked on the exterior view. The opaque, shielded cockpit appeared to dissolve as the system activated, revealing her target. Out there, a milky emerald green sphere hung against the empty veil beyond. Quell. Elith allowed the impression of the planet to engrave itself upon her mind, to find its place among the bedrock of all the research that had come before. This was the beginning of her true relationship with the world. The first welcome, the greeting, the embrace. With that single image fixed in her mind, she then allowed herself to study details. The wisps and swirls of cloud and storm. Vast regions of verdant terrain, wide rivers, mountain serrations. All these she read like the lines and wrinkles of a stranger's face, each hinting at how frequently expressions might furrow a brow or crease a cheek. For all the imagery available to her through other means, nothing could compare with that first introduction viewed through her own eyes. Soon enough, the world grew too large to see completely, and shortly thereafter, Elith at last had to turn her attention to her own flight controls. Once she entered the atmosphere, she made minor adjustments to avoid flying over population centers. Her vessel was designed for low signature entry, invisible to all but the most sophisticated systems, but there was no reason to put the design to unnecessary test. Her primary landing zone lay in the wilderness adjacent to Orinnes. As her craft descended on its final approach, Elith kept one eye on her instruments while allowing herself to take in the view. The terrain rolled with easy mountains staked with dark pines. There was no snow on the ground, but the trees and earth had a light, crystalline shimmer that testified to the region's cold. Elith reduced engine power and dropped to just a few hundred feet above the tree line, about 2 miles out from the landing zone. There was no pause between the alarm and the impact. A siren screamed. White light dazzled Elith's eyes, and in the same instant that the warning blared, her craft jittered sideways, as though the air had suddenly solidified just off her left wing. The shock left her momentarily dazed. Her hands lost the controls. The ship's automated systems fought wildly to regain balance, skating a knife's edge to avoid entering a tumble. Elith came to her senses enough to retake the controls, but the kinesthetic feedback coming through them was confused and fluctuating. Crippled by the impact, the ship's sensor network couldn't cope with the storm of forces tearing at it. For a few eternal seconds, Elith grappled with her injured craft, striving to filter out the feeling of the controls and to concentrate instead on the horizon and what her eyes were telling her. Her training prevented the panic that would have cost her the ship. Getting the craft level again was nearly more than she could manage, and once accomplished, was almost impossible to maintain. No smoke was visible, but the cockpit took on a strong odor of melting circuitry. A grinding vibration warned that the left side of her ship might shear off at any moment. The navigation system bleeped weakly, alerting her that she was off course for her intended landing zone, but otherwise offering no help. None of that mattered now. She would be lucky to survive a landing anywhere she could find.
As she scanned for a clearing or a flat enough patch of land, the thought came to her unbidden that she'd been attacked. And if she'd been attacked, that meant she had been tracked. And if she had been tracked, that very likely meant she would be under pursuit the moment she hit the ground, assuming she survived. It was a desperate move, but it was the only solution that came to mind in the few seconds she had to execute it. With nimble hands, Elith armed the ship's micro-rocket pod and then jettisoned the external fuel tank from her craft. In the next moment, she targeted the tank and fired off two rockets. Elith banked the ship, heading 45 degrees offline from her previous trajectory. The rockets impacted just before the tank reached the ground, quaking the vessel with a sonic wave. With any luck, the black smoke and crater from the fuel tank would be convincing enough to stall any pursuers from reaching her actual crash site. But she knew she wouldn't be able to create much distance between the two. Already the tops of the tallest pines were nearly brushing the belly of her ship, skeletal fingers extended to drag her to the ground below. After that, there was no thought or plan, only reflex and reaction. The ever-shifting tension and slack in the controls, the battering and scraping of the pines against the hull, the blurring of the frosted ground streaming by below, and then the ship pitched sharply forward, and the world bulged as if the planet itself were a wall of water rushing up to meet her.